The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. I was actually going to start with some quite serious stuff about developing ties with Bolivia, but it sounds like Eurovision's on everybody's mind and thoughts right now.
Well, we don't want it to be, but somehow it is.
And Bolivia's never really been the top of our news cycle.
Yeah, that's true. I think Eurovision might even be bigger than Bolivia in our world, at least. Anyway,
in a strange sort of way, absolutely. So yeah, this is a wonderful. What happens in Israel is that there is this huge TV singing competition to determine who will be Israel's representative at the next Eurovision. This year, as you rightly pointed out, it's Eden Alena. She comes from Kiryat Gat. She is from an Ethiopian family with a wonderful voice. And people really, really supported her. It's really been quite exciting. You know, obviously it's on TV and they've got the judges and they've got the audience in the studio. And of course, a lot of people watching at home. So we're going to be watching Eden very, very carefully. You know, I always get a lot of pleasure from seeing these wonderful successes that arise from the immigrants from Ethiopia. When we think about the disadvantaged situation that they were in when they arrived in Israel, many of them had no idea about, you know, any first world facilities, toilets, any other infrastructure, gas stoves that we use here, fridges and things like that. People came literally from an entirely different world. And from there, unfortunately, we've had a lot of problems arise where they haven't been properly supported in certain respects, but we have these wonderful successes as well, like Eden and others who've come through the ranks and really, you know, when I even sit on the bus and I hear, the kids speaking with, children from, you know, for me from Ethiopia, and I hear them speaking such a wonderful Hebrew, I really get filled with a lot of joy. Not only them, by the way, but we've got to think also about, you know, all the immigrants, who've come, from, somewhat disadvantaged situations and have formed the melting pot that is Israel. But Eden is a really great example of someone who's come from an immigrant family and risen to the top and made herself very famous as a result of becoming Israel's a representative at the Eurovision. Apparently, it's supposed to be starting on the 12th of May and culminating in that final, the 16th of May. And it's going to, I understand, be in Rotterdam this year. So we will be watching Eden very, very carefully
and
to see how she progresses.
Anthony, can she sing?
Can she sing? She can sing, Howard. She can sing. Honestly, she can sing. I mean, again, the Eurovision is kind of a contest that, you know, we don't necessarily all subscribe to. It has a certain style of song association with it and a certain type of entertainer. But Eden can sing, whether she goes to the Eurovision or wherever she happens to go to. She can really sing. Certainly Netta Barzilai has become a very, very famous artist in her own right as a result of her participation in the Eurovision and winning it for Israel. Mm. She's become very, very famous. So, you know,
in fact, I went on to, I checked her on YouTube, checked it out on YouTube. And in fact, I have seen her singing. I'm going to play it just after the 8 o'clock news, but she was on Israel's X Factor. Absolutely brilliant. She really, really is great. She's young. She's lovely. She's really, really great.
Oh, okay.
She's a nice, bubbly personality.
Yes.
She can definitely.
In fact,
sing.
I'm just showing how the photo of her, and you've definitely.
Of course, we've seen her before. She was a huge hit about a year ago.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So she is well known, and that's awesome. That is absolutely great. All right. Talking about, as you say, Anthony, a little bit more serious, topics. Tell us about the Bolivia story.
Well, there's been a delegation from the foreign ministry that have gone down to Bolivia to try to develop relations with the Bolivian government. And I think that this is just all part of Israel trying to tighten up relationships with various countries, which are kind of on the fringes. I mean, we saw Prime Minister Netanyahu trying to develop further ties with Sudan. Of course, there's some strategic issues behind trying to break up the Arab world, and Sudan is very much a part of that. But we've also had some interesting negative publicity for Israel coming from South America, Central America, South America. And so this delegation has been in La Paz for talks with senior government officials in order to try to resume the relations with Bolivia. Again, Bolivia, not necessarily one of those countries that necessarily has a huge influence in the international arena, but every vote counts. And so, you know, every country that's somehow changes its mind or changes the pattern of voting that has been the case up until now in the international community is very, very welcome indeed. So we will see how things develop with Bolivia. And of course, there's been work with Guatemala and with Honduras, in addition to, of course, the bigger countries in that area, Argentina, Colombia, Paraguay, you know, others. There's been quite a lot of work going on to try to improve the relations with those countries in Central and South America. So, you know, we will just be watching this as we do with other countries to see when the important votes come up at the United Nations and in other international community international forums, whether this has had any impact or not.
And Anthony, you may know that, in fact, there's a Bolivian Jewish community in South Africa.
I did not know that.
The Slovateks. You know Dr. Tzvi Slovatek and his wife Betty? They are, of course, from Bolivia.
Wow, I didn't know that. And
I had no idea.
They have
family
still in La Paz, who I visited when I was there, and some of the family have gone on to Panama, who hosted me for Shabbat dinner in Panama. And it's a fascinating little community in South America.
Amazing.
Very fascinating indeed.
Yeah. Anthony, there has been some action again last night after missiles were fired from Gaza. What are the details of the latest incidents there?
Well, the IDF, again, the Israeli Air Force carried out airstrikes against a few Hamas targets late last night, after three rockets were launched towards Israel at around midnight towards the area of Netivot. Apparently, all of the rockets landed in open fields. So even though there were code red sirens that sounded during the evening and people, of course, being forced to run to their bomb shelters, fortunately, the rockets landed safely. But once again, unfortunately, people were injured in the process of running to their bomb shelters. There were reports of two people who were lightly injured while running to bomb shelters. All in all, over the last week, about 13 rockets have been fired from Gaza. It's, in Israeli terms, a quiet week on the Gazan front, even though we've already spoken about these balloons that have been carrying explosive missiles as opposed to just incendiary devices, and the threat of them carrying even other missiles has been made. And so, of course, there's been a lot of attention towards these balloons and the missiles that have been coming over the border. Apparently, there was an explosive device that landed in the Be'er Sheva cemetery that was brought from Gaza by a balloon. So this is pretty serious. I mean, you know, it doesn't get much write-ups in the newspaper, not even in Israel. It's quite difficult to find where these things are written about. But, I mean, that's pretty serious. You don't want explosive devices landing in public areas, not in cemeteries and not anywhere else. So, again, you know, the idea of carrying out its stated policy of not allowing any attack on Israel to go unanswered. And in fairness, even though there were attacks that were carried out against several Hamas targets, particularly in the southern area of the Gaza Strip, they're very low intensity. I mean, one wouldn't consider this to be any kind of serious statement of war in the overall scheme of things. So relatively low intensity. It's almost like tit for tat. Nothing much more seems to be happening after that until the next incident. But clearly, things are still pretty tense on the Gaza border.
And going nowhere, which is the saddest thing. You know, we could have had exactly the same discussion, you know, weeks ago, months ago, years ago. It's actually terribly sad that this is just the same cycle that just doesn't get
absolutely
broken.
And what surprises a lot of people is that in spite of this cycle being ongoing now, not for days and weeks and months, but literally for years, one would have thought that the residents of southern Israel would somehow really be protesting and saying enough is enough. And we've got the third opportunity to vote for a prime minister and for a government. And yet most of them continue to support Prime Minister Netanyahu. He gets a lot of support from that part of Israel. And that's an interesting and surprising fact to a lot of people. I mean, I know we said there isn't much electioneering going on, and there really isn't. But it is a surprising thing that the residents of southern Israel have been forced to endure what they have to go through day in, day out, without standing up and saying, hang on a second, maybe if we have a change of government, the situation will change. I'm not suggesting that that's an answer at all, because I don't know that it is. And maybe they've come to the realization that maybe things could be worse for them if there was a change of government. I'm not really quite sure what the logic is. But if I was in that situation, I would have said anything is better than what we have right now. I can't imagine having to live every day wondering if again tonight we're going to be running to bomb shelters. You know, that's just one of these unfathomable kind of conundrums that we see here, is that in spite of all of this going on, and really the residents of southern Israel have had to endure a great deal of hardship, they continue to be huge supporters of the Likud and of the Prime Minister.
The Palestinian Authority, that said, has acknowledged that it's continuing security cooperation with Israel. Now, what's the source of this admission?
Well, this is a fascinating one because, of course, we saw the Palestinian Authority jumping up immediately after that Trump peace plan was unveiled, saying we've cut off ties with the United States again, I add in brackets, and we've cut off ties with Israel, and letters have been issued formally stating that we are no longer cooperating, there will be no security cooperation, and we will have nothing to do with either of these entities because, you know, obviously they felt very, very affronted by the Trump peace plan, and of course the fact that they weren't involved, and the fact that they feel that what Trump is trying to present is really not coming anywhere close to the things that they are requiring and demanding as part of the progress towards a Palestinian state. And yet, when it came to discussions with the European Union officials, which was, seems to have been kind of slightly more sensibly conducted rather than in a fit of pique and without, you know, all the stress and the necessity to respond and to retaliate against what I think was sort of a public humiliation in a sense. I mean, the fact that they weren't represented when Trump decided to unveil this peace plan, I think really spoke a lot about exactly what's going on with the Palestinian Authority. And I think that that was something of a public humiliation that they weren't even there, even though they are really party to all of this that's going on. And instead, they were kind of represented in inverted commas by some of the other Arab countries from the Gulf and from Egypt and from Saudi Arabia and from other parts. But none of their people were formally represented, even though they were invited, but they decided not to be there. And I think that that, in a sense, might have been an incorrect decision from their point of view. But obviously, they wanted to show that they weren't supporting anything that Trump was presenting. And more than that, they had to retaliate. Now, in the, you know, the quiet of the back rooms, talking to European Union officials in particular and some other Western diplomats, they've actually acknowledged that there is continuing to be security coordination with Israel, and there is continuing, obviously, to be some backroom diplomatic contacts between the U.S. and the Palestinian Authority. And that comes as no surprise to any of us, because it would be very, very damaging to them if they decided truly to break off relations with Israel, truly to, you know, forego any of the security cooperation and, of course, the economic cooperation, which is substantial. I mean, we shouldn't forget that so many people from the Palestinian Authority are working in Israel. They're moving backwards and forwards every day through the checkpoints. They're bringing economic sustenance to the Palestinian Authority area. Israel is responsible for collecting many of the taxes. Israel is responsible for supplying the electricity in large part to the Palestinian Authority and, of course, water supplies. So, you know, you can't just turn around and say, hang on, we're going to cut off all of our connections. And I think that it would go without saying, I think we would all understand that they couldn't possibly cut off all these connections, even though they've made these public statements.
We've never really taken those statements. I mean, did anyone really take those statements seriously? You know, if we had to take seriously every time Abbas said that he was stepping down, he was resigning, he was cutting ties with Israel, you know, it's exhausting.
It is somewhat exhausting. I think it's interesting that Abbas met yesterday with the representative of the Russian President, Vladimir Putin, who sent an envoy to discuss the latest developments. And, of course, the relations with the Russians is quite interesting. The Russians, by the way, coming out saying that they felt that the Trump peace plan contravened international law, so very much not supporting the notion of the Trump peace plan, and now discussing things with the Palestinians. Tomorrow we'll bring new stories, and I look forward to talking about those.
Absolutely, 100%. It is just after 8 o'clock. Anthony Reif, thank you as always. Here is Lindy with you.